Radio Prague News.
The Supreme State Attorney says the President's comments suggest his removal is being mulled. President Zeman's right-hand man is accused of trying to influence a minister, and the funeral has taken place of writer Jiří Stránský. The Supreme State Attorney Pavel Zeman says comments made by President Miloš Zeman at the weekend indirectly confirm that his removal is being considered. The head of state criticised the prosecutor's stated intention of analysing a preliminary European Council report, suggesting that Prime Minister Andrej Babiš was in conflict of interest. Critics say that Mr. Babiš and President Zeman are in alliance. Pavel Zeman told the Czech news agency he wouldn't respond to the president's invective against him. Mr. Babiš's appointment as Justice Minister of Maria Benešová has led critics to suggest that state prosecutors could be undermined. They are due to respond to a police call to charge the Prime Minister with the alleged abuse of EU subsidies. Ms. Benešová is also seen as being close to President Zeman. A former Minister of Justice, Robert Pelikán, says that Vratislav Mináš, the head of President Miloš Zeman's office, tried to pressure him to intervene in a case involving Lesní správy Lány, which oversees forestry at the president's residence. News site eRoslas.cz reported on Monday that Mr. Mináš had repeatedly pushed Mr. Pelikán to file a complaint of violation of the law in the case. The former minister rejected this call. Police have charged a subordinate of Mr. Mináš and another man over the case, which centres on a public contract worth 100 million crowns. eRoslas.cz also reported that President Zeman's right-hand man had also tried unsuccessfully to pressure a later justice minister. Mr. Mináš has refused to comment. The funeral of writer Jiří Stránský took place at Prague's Church of Our Lady Before Teen on Monday. The mass was served by the head of the Czech Roman Catholic Church, Cardinal Dominik Duka, who said that Mr. Stránský had enriched Czech culture thanks to the brave life he had led. Mr. Stránský, who was 87, spent almost a decade in communist labour camps as a political prisoner after being convicted of so-called treason in the hardline 1950s and drew on those experiences in his writings. In the 1990s, he became president of the Czech Pen Club. Unemployment in the Czech Republic fell to 2.6% in May from 2.7% the previous month. That's according to official figures released on Monday. Some 200,675 people were out of work in May, the lowest number recorded since the same month in 1997. Czech tennis player Markéta Vondrousová has shot to 16 in the world rankings, her highest ever position. The 19-year-old climbed 22 places in the WTA rankings after losing to Ashley Barty of Australia in her first Grand Slam final at the Paris Open on Saturday. And finally, a look at the weather. It should be mainly sunny with the chance of storms in the Czech Republic on Tuesday. Temperatures are expected to reach up to 31 degrees Celsius. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news. Hi there, listener. This is Radio Prague, and I'm Ian Willoughby. Today, Prime Minister Babiš launches a counter-offensive in a bid to shore up public support after allegations that he's in conflict of interest. Monday marks the 77th anniversary of the Nazi atrocity at the Czech village of Lidice. And later we meet the guys behind the Honest Guide videos to discuss their new book about Prague and much more than that. And that's all coming up in today's programme. Prime Minister Andrej Babiš has launched a massive counter-offensive to the preliminary EU audit, concluding that he has a conflict of interest due to strong links to his former business empire. Mr. Babiš refuses to meet with the organisers of street protests against him. However, he's taken every opportunity to present himself as the victim of a targeted smear campaign intended to drive him out of politics, as Daniela Lazareva reports.
The European Commission's audit is full of half-truths and inconsistencies. It is an attack against the Czech Republic and its interests, an effort to destabilise the country. It is the work of incompetent auditors. Those are just some of the arguments with which the Czech Prime Minister defended himself in Parliament.
We must refute this piece of nonsense that has arrived from Brussels. And you can be sure that the media will live off it for weeks and months. We must refute it with hard facts and hard data.
Speaking in Bratislava at the weekend, the Prime Minister said the Czech Republic was not Slovakia and there would be no change of government just because protesters were clamouring for it in the streets. He questioned the actual number of protesters at the last demonstration in Prague, saying the media had made it out to be bigger than it was, and stressed that the people protesting against him in the streets were simply dissatisfied with the outcome of the country's democratic elections. He has repeatedly refused to meet with a protest organiser, stressing that they're not interested in hearing his arguments, merely in seeing him go. So how successful has the embattled Czech Prime Minister been in convincing the public that he is innocent of any wrongdoing? A number of flash polls conducted in the midst of the crisis reveal that while Czechs feel that the Prime Minister is on thin ice with regard to his former business conglomerate, they are not ready for a change of government. And if general elections were held in the country today, the Prime Minister's ANO party would still come out victorious despite taking a slide as a result of the Prime Minister's problems. According to a poll conducted by the Median agency, 55% of Czechs feel that the affair surrounding the Prime Minister is damaging the Czech Republic. Asked whether they believe that the Prime Minister had never used his influence in favour of the Agrofert conglomerate, 31% said they believed him, while 53% did not. 59% of respondents also expressed the view that the European Commission was following standard mechanisms in its approach to the affair. Asked whether the present crisis should lead to the fall of the government, 70% of respondents answered no. 37% of them said they would like to see the government continue without the embattled Prime Minister. 33% said they would like to see it continue as it is. At the same time, 56% of respondents expressed the opinion that the government should ask the lower house for a vote of confidence. The Prime Minister has dismissed the latter suggestion and challenged the opposition to call a vote of no confidence, saying he would be happy to tell the nation how many billions of crowns in EU funds the country had lost due to their mismanagement. Even if they tabled the motion, the centre-right opposition parties know they lack the votes needed to bring down the government. At the present time, they have 87 and would need 101. Their only chance is to win over some of the Social Democrat or Communist Party MPs, who have said they will continue to support the Babiš administration. So in the coming weeks, the battle of words in the lower house and out in the streets is likely to continue.
And that report was by Daniela Lazareva. It's exactly 77 years since units of the German security police liquidated the central Bohemian village of Lidice in retaliation for the assassination of Reinhard Heydrich. While far from the only example of such cruelty during the war, Lidice became famous around the world, in part due to its symbolic value as a place of tragedy, but also of hope. Tom McEncroe has more.
After an ultimately successful assassination attempt was carried out on Reinhard Heydrich on May 27, 1942, by two Czechoslovak soldiers parachuted into Bohemia, the Nazi leadership was thirsty for vengeance. Adolf Hitler apparently wanted to execute 10,000 Czechs from the ranks of the intelligentsia, but future protectorate leader Karl Hermann Frank dissuaded him. Instead, Frank suggested a one-off example that would cripple future dissent by fear. His suggestion was Lidice. Although two men from the village were serving in the RAF at the time, its inhabitants seems to have had nothing to do with the assassination itself. Rather, Lidice's fate was the result of a particularly tragic consequence. Martina Lemanova, the director of the National Lidice Memorial, told Czech Radio.
Tím hlavním důvodem byl takový trošku nešťastný dopis.
The main reason was a rather unlucky letter from a man who wanted to end a relationship with his lover because he was married. The letter ended up in a battery producing company where she worked called Palava. Its director, Jaroslav Jan Pala, was terribly scared after all that happened following the assassination and found the letter strange, so he made sure it was handed over to the Gestapo.
Prostě dostal strach, velice se bál.
The author of the letter had simply wanted to wiggle himself out of the relationship by implying that he was on the run as a romantic hero. But once the Nazis found out about the two RAF pilots, the fate of the village was sealed. A week later, the village was encircled by SS and police troops. The women and children were interned at a school, while all of the 173 men were shot. The women were then sent to Ravensbrück concentration camp, where 60 of them died. Many of the children were sent to Chełmno in today's Poland, where they would be killed by exhaust fumes. The youngest was sent to Germany for re-education. Nazi planners were so meticulous that even those who were not in Lidice at the time did not escape, says Miss Lejmanová.
Několik mužů bylo právě na noční směně v Poldovce.
A few men were on night duty at a nearby factory. When they found out about what had happened, a few of them tried to run away. They found them and executed them in Prague's Kobylisi.
A pak je popravili v Praze v Kobylisi.
All buildings, including the cemetery, were blown up. Lidice's fate was not completely unique. Nazi occupiers, especially in the Soviet Union, conducted many similar reprisals. Yet unlike so many others, Lidice received international attention. Many settlements across the world took on its name, and thousands of parents named their children Lidice. This was in part because Lidice acquired a symbolic value of both tragedy and hope already during the war, says Miss Lejmanová, giving the case of the Lidice Shall Live movement, which was started immediately after news of the event reached Great Britain. Started by Bernard Stross, it collected funds with the aim to rebuild the village after the war.
Pro tehdy Velkou Británii, která nebyla v lehké situaci, tak to najednou byl strašně důležitý.
For the United Kingdom, which was not in a good financial situation at the time, it was a very strong symbol which gave people hope that the Third Reich would be defeated, that Hitler would end and the people of Europe would be free again. Lidice, therefore, has a very special role. On the one hand, it is a place of tragedy, but on the other, one of hope.
Je to místo té tragédie, ale zároveň je to místo i
An annual commemoration of the anniversary attended by state dignitaries will take place in the village on Saturday.
And that report was by Tom McEncrow. Now, in the final part of our program today, I meet Janek Rubesch and Honza Mikulka, the guys behind the very popular Honest Guide videos.
If you are looking for a true hidden gem in downtown Prague, and when I say hidden gem, I mean an amazing rooftop, you're at the right place.
Janek Rubesch is the face of Honest Guide, while Honza Mikulka does the camera and all the other technical stuff. Their videos highlighting great spots to see in Prague and warning visitors of scams to avoid are huge, and their YouTube channel has over 435,000 subscribers. Now they've produced the book Honest Guide Prague, with illustrations by Eliška Podzimková, text by Rubesch, and photos by Mikulka. I discussed the unorthodox guidebook with the two guys outside their second home, the pub Lokal u Bile Kuzelki, and I first asked Mikulka what had inspired the publication.
We've been always kind of thinking that we can make the book because we've been doing videos for quite some time, but we figured like we can never touch them. And we thought like it would be nice to have something in our hands which would be actually useful, even not only for tourists but also for us, because I think that mostly we made the book for ourselves. It's the same with the videos. We don't really think about what people need, but we're always thinking like, what do we like? And that's how we kind of get the idea that we could make a book that would make us happy.
And Janek, do you use guidebooks? When I was coming here, I was thinking, I have guidebooks, but they're all kind of gathering dust. And the last time I brought one somewhere was some years ago.
I don't think I've ever used a guidebook, as in a guidebook. So if we're speaking of lonely planets and stuff like that, I can imagine using some other kind of book, maybe some architectural tips that I just used with my friend when we traveled through Portugal or when we traveled to New York. So that's something we did with our book. It's not really a guidebook in a way, but it's more of like places we like. There's no addresses, there's no locations. It doesn't really tell you how to get there or which tram to use, the opening hours. It's just 50 places we like, and it's sort of like, hey, look, here's my personal story from my life, and here's a nice picture about it.
We're at one of the places in the book, the pub Local Ubile Kuželky. Why did you include this place in the book, Hansa?
We call this place sort of our, well, like the second home. It's our base camp. This is a place for us which has some uniqueness to it because it's right next to the Charles Bridge, which is the main tourist path. Every tourist go there and they never turn the path. And right here, right next to the bridge, is actually a great local pub where you can meet friends. You can meet people that you normally meet maybe in the office or in the streets of Prague. I don't even remember when we discovered that. It was like 2011, and we just kind of fell in love with it. And also, they have the best beer in Prague. And I know that that's a really hard saying, that a lot of people think that their pubs have the best beer, but I'm pretty sure this is the place.
I think some people know that this is your favorite place. You've written about it, you've spoken about it. Do people come here expecting to meet you guys, Janek?
I think almost every day, and they're quite happy when they meet us. And some people are actually shocked when they see us, either here or on the street. They're like, what are you doing here? And our reply is always, well, we live in the city and we visit the places we recommend. It's not that we recommend places we don't go to. We actually visit 99% of the places we show in the videos or in the book.
One of the places that's included in the book was not actually a place, it's an idea, and that is Empty Prague. Tell us, how does one experience Empty Prague, Janek?
Well, you do this. You hop on a time machine and you go back 30 years in time. Or there's another device you can use, which is an alarm clock, and you set it to an early hour. It doesn't need to be that early. Actually, even still 8 o'clock will get you a relatively empty Charles Bridge and Old Town Square. And I'm describing it in the book as a totally different city, because the city is struggling with mass tourism that has turned it into something totally different other than the Prague I remember as a kid. So if you actually want to see the streets, see the buildings, see the architecture, see everything, you better wake up early.
I was amused by one thing in the book, and that is that you guys warn people that if they go to certain old school pubs like Ujelinku, that they may get a kind of frosty reception. Do you have any tips, Janek, on how people should behave when they go to these places, if they're not to be thrown out or whatever?
Behave like yourself. I guess you shouldn't behave differently, but, you know, expect that you may have get some looks and you may get kicked out or you may not get served. I don't think you should really adjust yourself. Just be normal. And I think if you're going to be normal and you fit in, then that's the right place for you.
And do you like these places, Hansa, where there could be a kind of negative reaction?
Those places have their its unique atmosphere. I always say that if you come with a smile, then you will probably be fine. Because most of the people, they act natural with people who are positive. If you go and be grumpy, then yeah, you will probably get a look. If you know, you complain about everything, something like, hey, this glass is kind of dirty. The truth is the glass will be dirty. It's part of the aura of the place. So the best thing to do is really just to put some things aside and try to enjoy the way it is.
It's fair to say that even us will have sometimes very hard time to order beer in some of these places. The first time I went to Uzlatého Tigra, it took some time to eventually get a beer. And I think Ujelinku, it took like 5 or 7 visits before I was eventually served a glass of beer.
And Janek, you say in the book that you were thrown out of the pub Učerného Vola. Is that actually true?
Well, what I did is I ordered a beer that is called a schnitt, which is a type of beer they serve at locales. And the guy was really, really mad at me. He said, if you want schnitt, go to a local, you idiot. And so he really was not happy with me. So I finished that beer he gave me. He gave me a regular beer, something totally different. And then I just left.
And a schnitt is a kind of frothy beer with extra head, is that right?
The very short definition is that it's a small beer in a large glass because, you know, a man would never order a small beer. That's girly stuff. So that's why you order a schnitt.
One thing also you include in the book is a paternoster. And there's one at Czech Radio, and every time I show it to people, they love it. People who don't know them, visitors. Is there anything in Prague that if you show people, they are guaranteed to go, wow? Something that always impresses visitors.
I think people are very often amazed by the architecture. We have a tip when we always say, always look up. Some people, some tourists, forget that quite often. And if we remind them, then they usually go like, oh wow, I've never noticed that. And that's not only for the tourists, but it's also great for locals. This is a good example. This building we're sitting next to, we've been sitting here with Janek for about, I don't know, 4 years. And once we looked up and we saw something completely, what we missed the whole time, and we were like, this can't be true. So that's one thing you can do everywhere, I guess. It's right there.
The white pin.
Yeah.
It's called By the White Pin. It's the pub is called By the White Pin, and we never noticed it. It's there in the corner.
But also one reason to look up in Prague is because at street level, so many places are ugly. And then, yeah, from that level up, from like 3 meters up, it's something else entirely.
It's not really that they would be necessarily ugly. That's a difference of taste. But they're same as in any other city around the world. So if you would cover everything from 3 meters above, you wouldn't be able to tell if you're in Paris, Prague, Dubrovnik, London. They're all exactly the same. That's why we're saying enjoy empty Prague, because all these places are closed and suddenly you can see the difference and you're not being distracted by the clutter that is on the bottom level of the street.
As in your other work, in the book you warn people about scamming and you give them advice on how to avoid scams. Is scamming, is being scammed such a common experience for visitors to Prague, Hansa?
We actually get emails or Facebook messages all the time about people who are even watching our videos but maybe missed a couple of them and they still got tricked into something. The problem with these scammers are that they're really good at tricking people and they're always developing new ways how to do that. Sometimes even like here, we sit in a pub and there comes a guy who we see that he got scammed. I think it's still a big issue. I think some people are aware of it, but there's definitely, even if one people gets scammed, that's a bad thing. And he'll remember that for such a long time, and no matter how he enjoys the place, this will be like number one thing that he will remember. And if someone asks him, hey, how was Prague? Oh yeah, they scammed me, and yeah, maybe I saw some bridge or whatever.
Janek, you travel quite a lot. Do you think the level of scamming is higher here, or is it just comparable to other big cities, say in Europe?
I can't really tell, but I do know, I would say 95% of the scams that happen in Prague, but I quite often look out for them in other cities. I was just in Lisbon, and I could see the same scams happening in Lisbon as happened in Prague, for example, with the ATMs or with extremely, and when I say extremely, I mean like 10 times more overpriced stores. So I guess it happens to any city that has mass tourism, Paris, Lisbon, Barcelona, Venice.
I realized from reading your book that there were several places that I didn't know in it and probably should know, for example, Cafe Tausig, Česká Varna. I presume you guys must know pretty much everywhere in Prague.
We absolutely do not. We absolutely do not. We discover new places almost every day. If you read the book very carefully, you will find out that we're both from the left side of the river, from the area around Angelen Ujest and Malá Strana. So that's where we suggest people to go most of the time. So I think we should move to Žižkov and to Vinohrady and to Nusle to discover more and more places. But Prague has so much more to offer than the two of us know.
Is there any part of you that doesn't want to mention places, for example, in your book or in your videos, for fear that more people would go to them and then they would lose this magic thing that made them so attractive in the first place, Hansa?
I remember we were struggling with one bar that we will never show it, and now it's in the book. The chili bar. They have amazing chili shots. You can't order two, you have to order at least three, which you know, means a good night ahead of you. We've also promised ourselves that we will probably never tell about the cantina, the cafeteria on Prague Castle, and we did. We have that in the book as well. So I'm not sure. I've always thought that we would keep some things secret, but I think maybe I came to a realization that it's much better to share the good places, because if more people can share the good place, it means that the place can stay there, they can pay their rent.
My answer always is, let's not hide the good places, let's turn the bad places into good places. And there are still in city center, there's 90% bad tourist places, so I think we should convince the bad places that they can also be nice places that will be welcoming not only to tourists but also to locals, because as of right now there are more places in city center where Czechs and people from Prague are not allowed and sometimes literally kicked out from the front door, which is just something I cannot really live with.
Why are they kicked out? I've never seen this.
Well, it happened to me quite sometimes. One time is mentioned in the book in the restaurant nearby, which is called Kampa Park, where I just asked if I can have a beer with the view, even though the beer was around 200 crowns. I wanted to enjoy it. And they said, no, it's all reservations and it's only for food. You can sit in the corner here. And I don't want to live in a city where you can't even go into a place just because you're Czech, because they know my wallet is not as thick as the foreigner's wallet.
And that was Janek Rubesch. You can also find a My Prague that I did with Janek on Radio Prague's website. And you can, of course, find the Honest Guide videos that he makes with Honza Mikulka pretty much anywhere online. But I'm afraid that's all we have time for on today's program. You can send us any comments you have to english@radio.cz. And you'll also find us, of course, on Twitter, on Facebook and on Instagram. But for now, from me, Ian Willoughby, and everybody here at Radio Prague, thank you very much indeed for listening, folks, and speak to you soon.